I'd like to resume our study in Ezekiel chapter 34 today by going to the New Testament first, to the book of John, chapter number 10, where Jesus uses the very imagery of a shepherd that we are looking at in the Ezekiel passage. Only he presents himself as the remedy for the problem of bad shepherds. So here are the words of Jesus, John chapter 10. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they'll flee from him, for they don't know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, he does not own the sheep. He sees the wolf coming and leaves the flock and flees. The wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice, so there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down. I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. So I think that's a very good passage to kind of have folded away in our heart as we approach this prophecy again in Ezekiel chapter 34, many hundreds of years earlier, where God was complaining about the false shepherds, the bad shepherds that were misusing the sheep, and what they really needed was God to be their shepherd. And that's exactly what happened. Jesus came to be that good shepherd, and the way that he redeemed the sheep was to lay down his life voluntarily to save them. So with that sort of background from the New Testament, let's go back to Ezekiel chapter 34, pick up at verse number 11, where God says through Ezekiel, thus says he who is God, behold, I myself will search for my sheep and will seek them out. So that's God talking. As a shepherd seeks out his flock when he is among his sheep that have been scattered, so will I seek out my sheep, and I will rescue them from all the places where they've been scattered on a day of clouds and thick darkness. Now, if you go and check elsewhere in Ezekiel, that idea of a day of clouds and thick darkness is a reference to the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord in that context is the destruction of Jerusalem and the scattering of the exiles into their Babylonian exile. And so God is already talking about the return back from that exile. In other contexts, he was already talking about that. Here, he seems to be talking about again. But it goes beyond that return. There is a bigger return yet that needs to happen. Verse 13, I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land, and I will feed them on the mountains of Israel, by the ravines, and in all the inhabited places of the country. I will feed them with good pasture, and on the mountain heights of Israel shall be their grazing land. There they shall lie down in good grazing land, and on rich pasture they shall feed on the mountains of Israel. So that's clearly a reference to bringing them back to the promised land. Verse 15, I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep, and I myself will make them lie down, declares he who is God. Now we should tie that into John chapter 10, where Jesus is the one who came to be that good shepherd to make it possible for the sheep to lie down in the promised land in safety and security and peace. Verse 16, I will seek the lost. And you remember how Jesus said, I have come to seek and to save that which was lost. Verse 16 again, I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the strayed. I will bind up the injured, and I will strengthen the weak, and the fat and the strong I'll destroy. Now, the fat and the strong here is not a reference to the health of these other sheep, but for the fact that they are overly fat because they steal the food of every other of the sheep, and they are overly strong. They push around and cause trouble. So this is where the metaphor changes slightly. Now we're not talking about bad shepherds causing trouble for the sheep anymore. We're talking about bad sheep causing trouble for the sheep. I will feed them in justice. So God's promise is he will eventually deal with the problems and provide true justice. Verse 17, as for you, my flock, thus says he who is God, behold, I judge between sheep and sheep, between rams and male goats. Now the shepherds would evaluate their sheep to decide which ones were to be used for sacrifices, which ones were to be used for breeding stock, which ones were to be used for eating purposes. And so they'd have to judge which ones were the ones he wanted to keep and make the most of. And that would include deciding which ones were the bad ones. You know, if you've got sheep that cause trouble for the other sheep, then you need to get rid of those. You know, we used to, on the farm when I was growing up, we would do that with chickens and things. If you got a rooster or a hen that's causing trouble for all the other roosters and hens, guess what? He became dinner. She became dinner or a stew because we didn't need that. We didn't need that problem. So that's what the shepherds were supposed to be doing, and the thing which God was going to do. He's going to remove the troublemakers out of the picture, which should remind you of another gospel passage. Matthew chapter 25. The dividing between the sheep and the goats that will happen when Jesus comes back. We continue in Ezekiel 34:18. It is not enough for you to feed on the good pasture, that you must tread down with your feet the rest of your pasture. So this is a complaint to the bad sheep. So it's not good enough that they get out there and eat the best grass and they stop the other sheep from getting to that best grass. They also tread down everything else so that it's not very easily attained. And to drink clear water, that you must muddy the rest of the water with your feet. So they get out into the stream to get their good drink from the clear water, but then they jump around in the water and make it all nasty and muddy for their sheep. It's the idea of spite and meanness and troublemaking. And this is, again, something that Jesus kind of attributes to the Pharisees. At one point, he says, you lay on the common people these burdens that you wouldn't even try to lift with one of your fingers. So they were just troublemakers for the common people. They were bad shepherds, bad sheep. Verse 19, must my sheep eat what you've trodden with your feet and drink what you've muddied with your feet? That's rhetorical. Why should they have to put up with that? Therefore, thus says he who is God to them, behold, I myself will judge between the fat sheep, that'd be bad, and lean sheep, that's the abused, because you push with side and shoulder and thrust at all the weak with your horns till you've scattered them abroad. So you troublemakers, I'm going to have to deal with you. I will rescue my flock. They shall no longer be a prey, and I will judge between sheep and sheep. So God has predicted there is coming a sorting out time, a time when the wicked will be removed from the kingdom, and all that will be left are the righteous. Verse 23, and I will set over them one shepherd. So we're back to the metaphor of the good versus bad shepherds. I will set over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he shall feed them, and he shall feed them and be their shepherd. And I, he who is, will be their God, and my servant David shall be prince among them. I am he who is, I have spoken. Now many of the commentaries, many of the preachers will identify David here as a symbol for Jesus himself, because as we've already talked about, Jesus is that good shepherd who comes and separates the sheep from the goats and establishes himself as the safe zone for all the righteous. And I can perfectly see that as an understanding of this passage. But if, as I suspect, a lot of this is ultimately tied into the resurrection of the saints and the transformation of the saints going into the millennial kingdom and then into the eternal kingdom, there may be the idea that David himself will literally be resurrected and he will have a place in the hierarchy of that millennial kingdom where Jesus is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. So he's at the top of the hierarchy, and then there will be others administering underneath him. And David would certainly be among those under him. We know that the 12 apostles were promised 12 thrones in the restoration, in the time of the kingdom, where they would administer over the 12 tribes of Israel. So it's not that hard of a leap to make this a literal reference to David being involved at that time. Ezekiel 34:25. God continues talking. I will make with them a covenant of peace and banish wild beasts from the land. Now this, I believe, is an indicator we're talking about the millennial period. There are other passages that relate to this idea of returning to the peacefulness of Eden, the time before animals became dangerous or scared of each other and of people, and a time when the eating of something other than vegetation came into play with the curse. In the restoration of all things, all the animals, all the people are going to be going back to the original plan, which was all of the food comes from vegetation. Nothing comes from flesh. So I will make with them a covenant of peace and banish wild beasts from the land so that they may dwell securely in the wilderness and sleep in the woods. If you do backpacking in backcountry or in mountainous wilderness regions, you're always reminded to be cautious about wild animals. Well, this is a promise that there is a time coming in the future when there will be no fear from wild animals anywhere. even in the most desolate areas. An animal there is not going to be a threat. Verse 26, I will make them and the places all around my hill, that'd be Jerusalem, Zion, a blessing, so something good. And I will send down showers in their season. They shall be showers of blessing. And those of us that grew up with the old hymns, immediately we have a song going off in our head with that. There shall be showers of blessing. Well, the showers here are a reference to the rain cycle that was necessary to grow the crops. You needed the rains to start back up again in the late fall through the winter, and then finish off with another burst of moisture in the very late winter, early spring. God is promising to restore the proper rain cycle to provide good harvests. Verse 27, the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, the earth shall yield its increase, and they shall be secure in their land. If you have plenty of food because the weather cycle is perfect, that's a good thing. And they shall know that I am He who is, when I break the bars of their yoke and deliver them from the hand of those who enslave them. They will no more be a prey to the nations, nor shall the beasts of the land devour them. They shall dwell securely, and none shall make them afraid. Now understand, this is all coming down at the same time that the refugees from the recently destroyed kingdom of Judah, city of Jerusalem, have arrived in Babylon. And Ezekiel is telling them, look, God is promising you, God is promising us that there is coming a time when you'll be back in the land, it will be peaceful, the weather cycle will be perfect, the agriculture will be providing everything that you need, and there will be no need of fear ever again. Now, that's not going to happen with their first return. It didn't happen with the historical return in modern times of ethnic Israelis to the Promised Land, but it will be true when Jesus Christ comes back and the new heaven and new earth is brought into existence at the same time as the resurrection and transformation of the saints. Verse 29, I will provide for them renowned plantations so that they shall no more be consumed with hunger in the land and no longer suffer the reproach of nations. And you know, one of the things that did in a lot of people during this time period of the destruction of Judah was famine. Verse 30, and they shall know that I am He who is their God with them, and that they, the house of Israel, are my people, declares He who is. You are my people, my sheep, human sheep of my pasture, and I am your God, declares He who is God. So they are being told that the good shepherd is going to bring them back to the pasture land of Israel, and everything will be fine at that point forward. So a great messianic passage here in Ezekiel chapter 34. Chapter 35 takes on a troublemaker nation again. We've seen quite a few of these prophecies pop up in Jeremiah and in Ezekiel. And this is against Edom. Edom was located south and a little bit east of the southern end of the Dead Sea. Its other name is Mount Seir. And these guys, throughout the history of Israel in the land, had caused trouble from time to time. And most recently, they were apparently cheering on the destruction of the Judean kingdom, of the city of Jerusalem, and the destruction of the temple itself. And so this prophecy is about how that's going to blow back on them, judgment-wise. Chapter 35, the word of He who is came to me. Son of man, set your face against Mount Seir. Prophesy against it. Say to it, Thus says he who is God, behold, I am against you, Mount Seir. So Mount Seir has a very serious enemy now. I will stretch out my hand against you, and I will make you a desolation and a waste. So the very thing that they're happy that's happened to Jerusalem and the Judean cities, that same thing's going to happen to them. I will lay your cities waste, and you shall become a desolation, and you shall know that I am he who is. Because you cherished perpetual enmity. So because you had this long-term bad attitude toward Israel, and gave over the people of Israel to the power of the sword at the time of their calamity, at the time of their final punishment. So as God is bringing judgment against Judah, apparently the people of Edom are not only cheering that on, they're also trying to see how they can facilitate it, how they can make things even worse for the Judean people. Now, how did they do that? Maybe they offered some sort of assistance to the Babylonians. Whatever it was, it's going to blow back on them. It's going to explode their direction. Verse 6, therefore, as I live, declares he who is God, I will prepare you for blood, and blood shall pursue you, because you did not hate bloodshed, and therefore blood shall pursue you. So death, destruction is going to follow them now. I will make Mount Seir a waste and a desolation, and I will cut off from it all who come and go. So their land is also going to be hit hard, probably by sword, famine, pestilence. And cities are going to be emptied out. And the people are going to lose population count. It's going to be bad. Some of them will go into exile. We've actually seen that prophesied in other prophecies. Verse number 8. I will fill its mountains with the slain. On your hills and in your valleys and in your ravines, those slain with the sword shall fall. So they are going to have lots of death and destruction. I will make you a perpetual desolation, and your city shall not be inhabited. Then you will know that I am he who is. So the Edomites are going to come to an end in this society that has felt badly toward Judah during its rough time. And it's interesting, in the years that follow, there will be hits against the Edomite society until finally the Nabataean peoples will totally dislodge the Edomite people from their ancestral region, and they will be pushed westward into southern Judah. And they will from then on be known to us in Bible history as the Idumeans, because they are displaced Edomites. They are Edomites that have lost their land, because their land is now a desolation for them. And that is how they're going to understand that there is a God, and you don't mess around with his plans or his people. Now, as an interesting irony, about 100 years before Jesus was born, there was a king, the great-great-nephew, I think, of Judas Maccabee, who forced the Idumean peoples living inside Judean territory to convert to the faith of Judaism. Now, some of them were quite willing to do that. Others were forced to do it. But that is how the family of Herod the Great effectively became Jewish. Even though they're referred to Edomites or Idumeans, their religion was actually Judaism, which is why the Romans had no qualms in referring to Herod the Great as king of the Jews, because they thought of Herod as just another Jew. Verse number 10. Because you said, these two nations, these two countries shall be mine, we'll take possession of them. That's a reference to northern Israel, southern Judah, because Edom has been at this for a long time. Although he who is was there in those places. Therefore, as I live, declares he who is, I will deal with you according to the anger and envy that you showed because of your hatred against them. And I will make myself known among them when I judge you, and you shall know that I am he who is. So Edom is going to come under God's judgment. I have heard all the revilings that you uttered against the mountains of Israel, saying, ah, they're laid desolate. They're given to us to devour. So they've got problems. Now is the time for us to eat them up, steal their stuff. Verse 13, and you magnified yourselves against me with your mouth and multiplied your words against me. I heard it. And thus says he who is God, while the whole earth rejoices, I will make you desolate. We've actually seen this in some other prophetic books, that the territory of Edom is somehow going to become very desolate in relationship to other future events. Verse 15, as you rejoiced over the inheritance of the house of Israel because it was desolate, so I will deal with you. You shall be desolate, Mount Seir, all Edom, all of it. And then they will know that I am he who is. So something bad is on the ultimate horizon for the Edomite people. And that brings us to chapter 36 with more promises of restoration for the people of Judah.